Intellectual Muscle, University Dialogues for Vancouver 2010. Who will be the future Olympic and Paralympic athlete? The impact of advances in science and technology and boldly assistive devices on sport. The provocative questions around Paralympians being able to outperform Olympians are addressed by Dr. Gregor Wolbring of the Department of Community Health Sciences in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Calgary.
Before I start with my presentation, I would like to thank the organizers for including me in this series of podcasts leading up to the Vancouver 2010 Olympic and Paralympic Games. It's quite an honor. My work is mainly concerned with the governance of scientific and technological advances. And in this presentation, I will look at the impact of science and technology advances on sport. The two main points of this presentation are that so far the discourse around so-called therapeutic bodily assistive devices in sport is too limited, as is the discourse around enhancement in sport in general. New and emerging science and technological products increasingly generate internal and external human bodily enhancements that go beyond the species typical, enabling more and more a culture of increasing demand for and acceptance of modification of the human body beyond its species typical boundaries. They generate products that can be employed to sell new social concepts, such as transhumanism, which is the idea to greatly enhance human intellectual, physical, and psychological capacities, and the transhumanization of ableism, which is a set of beliefs, processes, and practices that perceives the improvement of human body abilities beyond typical Homo sapiens boundaries as essential. As Beck states, the degree to which, as well as the circumstances under which we want to allow or even support enhancements, who has to pay for it, and how we can secure equality, will be crucial questions for the following decades. In a 2009 human performance study written for the European Parliament, one reads, "Currently, however, the EU has no platform for monitoring and discussing human enhancement issues. Arenas are lacking where the normative issues can be politically deliberated, and the gap between the needs and the concerns of the broader public and the practitioners and experts bridged." Advances in sciences and technologies increasingly generate products that allow for the internal and external modification of athletes, and they create external tools athletes can use, both of which influence the athlete's ability to perform. Many highlight that the appearance of internal and external enhancements of the human body that enable the body to perform beyond the species typical, with the anticipated advantages of the enhanced person in areas such as competitiveness in sport, education, and the workplace, enable a culture of increasing demand for and acceptance of improvements to and modifications of the human body beyond its species typical boundaries, and vice versa. In sport, these enhancement capabilities have various impacts. Genetic enhancement, gene doping, blood doping, and performance-enhancing drugs are already on the sport policy agenda. See Jim Rupert podcast in this series on gene doping and the World Convention on Doping, for example. However, as many show, no real consensus has been reached so far as to the broader issue of enhancement. The enhancement capabilities that increasingly influence existing sport disciplines will very likely, given today's social dynamics, lead to a new sport disciplines where the athletes of a given new discipline are all bodily enhanced. They will impact global sport and athletes. They will impact the relationship and identity of the Olympics and Paralympics and their athletes, the self-understanding of all athletes, but in particular Paralympic and Olympic athletes, and blur the line between Olympic and Paralympic athletes. They will increasingly change expectations of athletes, officials, spectators, sponsors, and governments. They very likely will lead to a category of athletes who incorporate enhancements openly, who outperform the non-enhanced, and who will have their own events competing against each other's. They will also lead to a new gap between athletes from high and low-income countries. It is to be expected that most of the bodily assistive devices leading to enhancements will be out of reach of athletes and sporting agencies of low-income countries. the appearance and discourse around therapeutic enhancement devices and the social concepts of transhumanism, ableism, and the transhumanization of ableism pose challenges for the Canadian strategy to increase numbers and quality of participation of disabled and non-disabled people in sport, physical activity and recreation, and for the realization of the objectives of the What Sport Can Do report, the Canadian strategy on ethical conduct in sport, and the London, Ontario Declaration Expectations for Fairness in Sport. People with disabilities are seen, for example, by the former Secretary General of the World Transhumanist Association, to play a key role in mainstreaming and increasing the acceptance of especially body techno-enhancements. The time is near where so-called therapeutic devices generated to mimic species-typical body structures and expected body functioning will outperform in numerous functions the species-typical bodies, giving rise to therapeutic enhancements. Human therapeutic enhancements add a new quality to the endeavor of the redefinition of sport, whereby the Paralympic athlete can be expected to be at the forefront of the redefinition. Donovan, Egger, Kaepernick, and Mendoza investigated in 2002 what might generate a climate of achieving performance-enhancing drug compliance in sport. They found that the likelihood of drug use is highest when threat appraisal is low, benefit appraisal is high, personal morality is neutral, perceived legitimacy of the laws and enforcement agencies is low, relevant reference groups are supportive of drug use, and high vulnerability on personality factors, for example, low self-esteem, risk-taker, pessimist. If it is indeed correct that Paralympic athletes receive less support and recognition than Olympic athletes, and if this problem is linked to a lower level of absolute performance of the Paralympic versus Olympic athletes, which seems to be a valid assumption taking into account the dominant culture of competitiveness, and if this problem is not rectified, it can be assumed that Paralympic athletes will embrace therapeutic enhancements as a means to close the social attention, respect, and support gap, and that none of the preventive factors identified by Donovan et al. Will be in existence. One can predict that enhancements done in the open and achieved through therapeutic devices will be seen as highly beneficial and not immoral. Paralympic athletes will have a high support level in the relevant support groups, and laws and regulations will be seen as having no legitimacy to prevent these kinds of enhancements. Indeed, one can make an argument that Article 4G2I and Articles 20, 25, and 26 of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities make a strong case for the production, development of, and access to therapeutic devices by people with disabilities, even if they enhance. Paralympic athletes might simply see bodily enhancements generated by therapeutic devices, from bionics to wheelchairs, as equipments, as tools. In the same way, the non-disabled athletes see a bobsled as a tool. Using them for competitions might be seen as legit equipments that could be standardized or compared enough to allow for new sport disciplines, such as bionic runners and wheelchair racers. Furthermore, the advances of these new sport disciplines based on the new abilities might develop outside of the Paralympic field with the involvement of Paralympic athletes under lifestyle sports. Meaning of these lifestyle sport activities for the participant is found in their creative and self-actualization potential. Lifestyle sports is about value-intense experiences in the inner or felt body, not the commodified, aestheticized, and disciplined body that many describe as symptomatic and expressive of contemporary consumer culture. The story of the Paralympic 21-year-old South African double below-the-knee amputee athlete Oscar Pistorius is only the first of many to come. Pistorius, a Paralympic champion, asked to be allowed to run in the Olympics if he qualified for his country's team. The world governing body for track and field, the IAAF, ruled on the 14th of January 2008, invoking its Rule 144.2, which deals with technical aids, that Oscar Pistorius is ineligible to compete in the Beijing Olympics because his prosthetic racing legs give him a clear competitive advantage. Pistorius appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS, questioning the judgment that his prosthetic racing legs give him a clear competitive advantage, and that his so-called cheetah legs are a case of techno-doping. In April 2008, the CAS ruled in his favor, stating that not enough evidence exists to claim that his cheetah legs give an unfair advantage, allowing him to attempt to qualify for the South African Olympic team. However, there is more to this ruling than that. The ruling also indicated that one could exclude a runner with prosthesis, including Pistorius, from competing in a natural leg running event if it could be proven that the prosthesis lead to an unfair advantage. The CAS ruling also indicates that the body structure as such cannot be used as a basis to justify the separation between different kind of Olympics. It did not say that a normal body is a prerequisite for being in the Olympics. It did not close off the possibility that Paralympic athletes with intrinsic enhancements or the ones who use external tools, bionics, wheelchairs, and other similar add-ons, could obtain their own event within the Olympics. This scenario would be similar to the case of other external tools, such as a pole, used in pole vaulting by species-typical body normative athletes. Pole vaulting athletes do not compete against a high jumper, but they gain their own event. The wheelchair and other external tools used by Paralympic athletes would be treated in the same way as poles and other external tools used by the species-typical body normative athlete. How do advances in science and technology fit with the One World, One Dream slogan of the Beijing 2008 Olympic and Paralympic Games, the Vancouver 2010 motto of Glowing Hearts, and the values and themes of the 2012 Cultural Olympiad and Paralympiad? Do they strengthen the ideas behind mottos, values, and themes, or do they threaten them? How can one support the first and minimize the second? Pistorius is not the first Paralympian who wanted to compete in the Olympics. Indeed, others already did, such as South African amputee Nathalie Dutoit in Beijing. However, Dutoit competed without an add-on device. Pistorius remains distinctive due to his utilization of an add-on during his activity. And it seems reasonable to expect that more Paralympic athletes will pursue participation in future Olympic Games with advances in therapeutic body assistive devices. One can already see various athletes with his type of the same prosthesis as Pistorius, and there are futuristic advertisements by mainstream companies which articulate this new vision of ability. For instance, in 2008, ESPN Sports Magazine ran a cover story highlighting bionic athletes from different sport disciplines. We can expect the future to consist of tighter integration between the prosthesis and the remaining body. Neural interfaces and Bluetooth technologies, enabled legs, are just two areas in development. Many add-on devices that integrate with the body will become available for athletes without and with a normal body. External tools used by Paralympic athletes, such as wheelchairs, already outperform the normal body, with more to come. So-called able-bodied people are already part of wheelchair basketball teams, which consist of mainly as impaired classified athletes. This dynamic around internal and external enhancements leaves us with two options as a society, as spectators. The first scenario involves a continued appreciation of elite performance and neglect of people who simply try their best within their limitations, meaning that we cherish absolute values such as who is the fastest. According to Ditmo, Mahoney, and Andrew, the United States Olympic Committee began to move away from funding mass participation and towards rewarding medal production in 1989 with the release of the Olympic Overview Report, which stated, "Winning medals must always be the primary goal of the United States Olympic Committee." Ditmo, Mahoney, and Andrew highlighted that the United States Olympic Committee required, starting 2004, members of the national governing bodies to present specific plans detailing how they plan to use financial resources from the United States Olympic Committee to increase their chances of winning Olympic medals. We will therefore value the people who run the fastest, who would be the enhanced people, and devalue a person who simply tries their best with the body given to them and whose performance, statistically, is inferior to that of enhanced people. Such a position reflects the current system of sports appreciation. If we maintain this form of ableism, it will lead to the following: the increased ability of new and emerging technologies to improve and modify the human body beyond its species-typical boundaries will enable the transhumanization of ableism. By extension, such circumstances would lead to the transhumanization of the Olympics, such that they become an arena for enhanced athletes, internal enhancements or external tools employed by the as impaired or normal labeled athletes. In contrast, the Paralympics might be a forum for the unenhanced, the impaired, and normal athletes who cannot compete against their enhanced counterparts. We would have the enhanced Olympics and the non-enhanced Olympics, maybe, with the majority of the spectators probably attending the enhanced Olympics. The transhumanist form of ableism will not just be employed in sport for the excitement of the spectator. This sentiment will also trespass into the life of the spectator. People will have to use enhancements to be more competitive in a professional or educational setting. The rat race for ever increasing abilities will continue with no end in sight. The second scenario would involve humanity's continued appreciation of the pursuit of excellence within whatever framework people find themselves. In this view, we would decide that the value of sport is not constituted wholly by those who have the highest level of cognition and physical functioning in absolute terms, but that sport is a celebration of personal best. This version would require us to abolish ableism as described above. Instead, we would require a global shift in discourses on the governance of ableism and the privileging of abilities about the type of abilities we think are required in our society if we want to flourish as a species. In this context, it is necessary to ask whether a worthwhile life can be brought about by adding the newest gadgets to the body for cognitive and physical enhancements. Alternatively, we might ask whether a good life is more likely to ensure through attention to how people relate to one another, on rewriting the social contract, and increasing social cohesion. Which scenario fits best with the spirit of the Olympics, the Beijing and Vancouver motto, and the values and themes of the London 2012 Cultural Olympiad and Paralympiad? How can the One World, One Dream vision of the Beijing 2008 Olympic and Paralympic Games, the Vancouver 2010 motto of Glowing Hearts, and the values and themes of the London 2012 Cultural Olympic and Paralympiad be achieved in the context of ableism as exhibited today and its transhumanized version to come? Which scenario will fulfill the themes and values? What inspires and involves young people, and what generates a positive legacy? Which scenario ensures honor and shares the values of the Olympic and Paralympic Games? It is unrealistic to imagine that one can stop the development of enhancement products under scenario one. If one watches elite sport only because it involves the breaking of records rather than sport simply being valued as extraordinary expression of human struggle, then it will be necessary to consider the outcome of such extreme level of competition. The enhancement debate is not just a technical discussion to be dealt with through technical rules. It is a development that demands a broad public debate as to what people see as important about their culture, which abilities people consider to be important, and about the global impact of such transformations. It asks for a deep consideration of the governance of ableism and the privileging of certain abilities over others. Spectators will be required to rethink what they expect from athletes, life, and each other. Athletes will need to reconsider what they expect from spectators, sport and life. If athletes use enhancements, not deceitfully but openly, this could have an impact on participation in sport at the grassroots, perhaps including some people because of the high cost of enhancements. Yet, a further consideration is how enhancements become utilized outside sports. If the public modifies themselves, then there is no reason why athletes should not be entitled to follow. In sum, our present assumptions about what is legitimate in sport and outside are currently in turmoil. New ways must be found to prevent a social disaster looming because of the ever-increasing ability to modify the body beyond species' typical boundaries and the increasing visibility of new social concepts such as transhumanism and the transhumanization of ableism. All sport and athletes at all levels, along with its broader practice community, coaches, spectators, administration, and especially the youth of the world, should play a major role in shaping the vision of sport for human futures that will inevitably come about.
Intellectual Muscle was developed by Vancouver 2010, UBC Continuing Studies in collaboration with universities across Canada, and the Globe and Mail.